last month was one of the hottest Mays on record. And we're talking globally here, in a time when the past 5 years are the warmest documented and projections say the Earth's temperature rise shows no signs of slowing down. Scientists with the United Nations have predicted a strong risk of climate change-related crises like severe flooding and worsening food shortages by 2040. And if you're keeping track, that's just 21 years from now. But it's been 3.5 years since diplomats from nearly 200 nations met in Paris to discuss how to avoid this nightmare scenario. Over the next 2 weeks in Bonn, Germany, many of those same representatives are meeting again. Only this time, it's to talk about how to follow through on the pledges that 195 of those countries made. And yet the climate projections since Paris haven't shown a brighter future. If anything, they've become more dire. Current estimates have temperatures rising not by 2 degrees Celsius, the high end of the Paris Agreement's goal, but by closer to 4 degrees Celsius by 2100. So the big question is, are these international climate conferences actually accomplishing anything? And if not, what else can be done? This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Joining me now is Paul Bodner, who played a key role in creating the Paris Agreement as Senior Director for Energy and Climate Change at the National Security Council under the Obama administration. And he's currently Managing Director at the Rocky Mountain Institute. Also with us here in studio is Alexander Kaufman, climate reporter for HuffPost. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Alex, let's start with you. Before we even get to Bonn, we've got this backdrop of what is changing environmentally. I feel like every day in the news, there's another article that comes out that says it's getting worse faster and faster. How do current climate projections compare to where they were just 3 years ago?
Well, things certainly got a lot more serious when the IPCC report came out late last year in October. It basically said that if we are going to keep warming within the 1.5 degrees Celsius scenario that we hope to keep it within, and for context, we're at about 1.1, we are going to have to basically halve global emissions over the next decade or so and begin to suck carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So that was a really sobering assessment that I think really jogged a lot of policymakers. Now, speeding up to just a few weeks ago, there was the report that came out of Hawaii that showed that we hit 415 parts per million CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere, which is a level unseen basically since the dawn of human evolution. So things are really becoming a lot more alarming at a faster rate than we thought.
Paul, you were directly involved in the Paris talks. When you look at what's happening today, how much progress have we made or not made since Paris?
Well, Tanzina, climate change has been called the toughest problem in international relations because of the disconnect between a collective action problem that spans the globe and the way that the international system is divided into 195 little pieces, where each of the leaders of those countries are looking after mainly their short-term interests. So it took 30 years of trial and error to get to the Paris Agreement, and I think there's good news and bad news over the last few years. The good news is that the framework that was negotiated has endured massive political headwinds, obviously in the United States, but elsewhere, and every single nation that signed up to it is still on board, the United States being the only one that has threatened to withdraw, but under the rules of the agreement cannot actually do so until, ironically, the day after the next U.S. presidential election. So that's good. We now have, hopefully, an enduring framework for the decades to come to help countries ratchet down their greenhouse gas emissions. The bad news is that that framework depends on nations setting targets that are ambitious and executing against those targets. And as Alex mentioned, there we're currently falling short so far. We're not heading to a 2-degree world based on the pledges that have been made. Some countries are doing well to execute the things they've already committed to. Some are not. And in the next 12 months or so, countries will be getting back together to review whether they should ratchet up what they promised to do.
Alex, what are the goals for what's happening today or in the next 2 weeks here in Bonn? What are some of the tangible outcomes that are expected from this meeting?
So this Bonn meeting is sort of one of these incremental meetings that happen in between the larger UN climate conferences the COPs, as they're often called. And these are essentially negotiating sessions to talk about the rulemaking process for applying the goals that were agreed to at the COPs. So at this, they are still trying to suss out what some of that rulebook will look like and figure out how what implementation of the goals under the Paris Agreement and how you ramp up those goals, what that would look like.
So the big question that we're trying to answer here, and I want to get to both of you, is are these talks enough given the severity of the situation? And that's just from the perspective of saying all these countries are getting together, they're flying in, which in and of itself is a carbon footprint. You know, is that enough to really move the needle? Paul?
Yeah, you know, when we first started working on this issue as an international community, we thought that the best way to deal with it was to sort of figure out how much carbon pollution should be in the atmosphere or could be in the atmosphere, find some rational way of dividing that up among nations, assigning them targets, and then punishing them if they don't meet those targets. That was the framework of the Kyoto Protocol. And it simply didn't motivate countries to do any of those things because of the way that we have, the system we have of international law. And so the Paris Agreement is a different approach, and as I said, an enduring approach, I believe, but it does require countries to set their own targets. And so what really matters now is not what's happening necessarily in the negotiating halls, but what's happening in national capitals, what companies are doing, states and regions, and so on. You know, when we negotiated the Paris Agreement, we had as an objective to end the era of multilateral climate diplomacy, meaning we wanted to move beyond the stage where the G20 was arguing at the most the highest levels about whether climate change was real and how to address it. We wanted to move it down into the realm of action and implementation rather than high diplomacy. So if these talks in Bonn are a little boring, that's not necessarily a bad sign. That was the intention, but the attention does need to focus elsewhere and the spotlight, and that's on individual nations.
I'm speaking with HuffPost reporter Alex Kaufman and Paris Climate Agreement negotiator Paul Bodner about the efficacy of international climate conferences. This is The Takeaway. So, Alex, wanted to get back to that question. I mean, are these talks enough, these conferences enough? Give us your sense. Or is it more important to actually see change on the ground in local municipalities, for example?
Well, of course, local change like that makes it a lot easier to scale up. You know, it's much easier to look at a framework like, for instance, you know, we're trying to figure out what the national framework for the U.S. is going to look like. And New York State just passed one of the most aggressive and ambitious carbon reduction laws in the nation. And that is a model that can potentially be scaled. So that's a promising thing. But looking at these talks more broadly, I think it's healthy to point to a peer-reviewed paper that just came out in the Oxford Journal of Environmental Law that basically looked at some of the conflict of interest issues in the UNFCCC and how, you know, a lot of fossil fuel companies, a lot of big polluters are able to influence the talks through their participation either as observers that are able to comment throughout the process or as, you know, delegates within you know, national delegations. And that is certainly a complicating factor. It's something that for years now has been a problem for a lot of low-lying Pacific island nations that say, you know, it's not only unfair that the United States has the carbon footprint that it has historically and currently, but, you know, it also is bringing on its oil companies to participate in these talks when they are such, you know, malevolent actors in these negotiations. And so I think this paper, you know, really identifies some of those conflict of interest issues and may be a way forward to strengthen these talks and make them more effective, at least from the perspective of countries with the most at risk.
Also, we know at the national level, the EPA is set to unveil President Trump's revision of President Obama's Clean Power Plan. Paul, what are your thoughts on that? What are you expecting to see here?
Well, I think the story of the Obama Clean Power Plan is actually an encouraging one, even though it has been abandoned by the Trump administration. As you know, the president invested a lot of political capital and his team spent a lot of energy developing what was considered the centerpiece of the domestic climate policy of that presidency, which was a regulation that would require reductions in emissions from power plants all across the country. But what's interesting about it is that the levels that we set at the time for reducing those emissions by 2030 with such a regulation are now actually on track to be met by 2020, next year, without that regulation. And that points to something really interesting and encouraging, which is that the pace of technology development, and innovation in the private sector is actually sometimes outpacing the efforts of policymakers in a helpful way. And that is why it's so important to allow innovation in the private sector to drive outcomes, because it's not necessarily true that politicians and bureaucrats can do it better.
I'm wondering also that it feels like if each subsequent administration uses this as a political football, then are we actually going to make any progress here, or are we going to get past the climate tipping point? I'm wondering if either one of you is optimistic that it won't be used that way and that will actually make change.
So the unique thing about climate change is that speed matters. Every year that we delay action, we reduce the chances that we can grapple with this problem. And so we don't have time to lurch between Democratic and Republican perspectives from one administration to the next. It's all about the pace of change. And so the next 5 years, the next 10 years are not just an important window, but the most important window for taking action on climate in this country.
Alex.
I'm somewhat optimistic. I mean, I think that the lifespan for climate denialism, as it has been practiced by particularly the Republican Party in the past decade or so, is shortening pretty rapidly. I mean, if you look at the extreme weather events that we're experiencing, if you look at just the mounting scientific projections that we're seeing, it's really hard to make the argument that things aren't changing and that humans aren't impacting it. That being said, while some of the goals of the Clean Power Plan are set to be met on a much earlier timeline, thanks to innovation, thanks to state level intervention, we are also seeing an uptick in U.S. emissions, particularly methane emissions, which are coming from natural gas, which is credited with reducing a lot of those CO2 emissions because natural gas has largely supplanted coal-fired electricity generation. And that's a big concern. Natural gas is mostly methane. Methane is a potent, although shorter-lived, greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. And, there was a report that came out just yesterday that said that we're seeing thawing of permafrost in the Arctic 70 years earlier than scientists previously predicted it. And that can set off some really frightening natural cycles. So, resting on the laurels of the reductions that have been able to be met in this short time and hoping that the next administration is going to do more and hoping that the one after that won't reduce that is wishful thinking, I think.
All right. Thanks to both of you for speaking with us about this. Paul Bodner was involved in the creation of the Paris Agreement as President Obama's Senior Director for Energy and Climate Change at the National Security Council, and he's currently a Managing Director of the Rocky Mountain Institute. And Alexander Kaufman is a climate reporter for HuffPost. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.